Module 8 is Optimizing Risk for Strategic Advantage. This covers Chapter 8 in the textbook and represents our fourth and final risk quadrant. We've talked about hazard risk, operational risk, financial risk, and now we're going to talk about strategic risk. So let's go ahead and get out our study sheet, and as you can see, we're going to go through the basics of strategic risks, and we'll talk about the strategic risk management process, and also just go through ways of applying strategic risk management. We'll start, though, by talking about strategic risk basics, and then we'll focus on the strategic management process. We'll then discuss incorporating risk into strategy, and we'll wrap up with strategic risk management application. Let's start, though, by talking about strategic risk basics. And you want to go ahead and get out your risk quadrants handout. We've talked about this handout over the last few modules. Let's have it in front of us here as we go through strategic risk basics. Strategic risks are any factors that could affect a business, include the upside and downside associated with the business strategy and implementation. Once again, if we look at our risk quadrants handout, you'll notice that we've got two categories of risk, hazard and operational, that are pure risks, which represent either loss or no loss. That's it, no possibility of gain. But the financial and strategic risks represent speculative risks, which means we're dealing with a risk that could result in a loss, but could also result in a gain. And so when we talk about strategic risks, that includes the upside and downside associated with the business strategy or the implementation of business decisions. So we could see gains here, we could see losses here. It's a type of speculative risk. It's best to approach strategic risk with an eye toward preventing problems and exploiting opportunities. The goal is to determine whether a particular business decision is worth the risk. Sometimes it's easy to get confused between operational risk and strategic risk. But remember, operational risk is a type of pure risk. It includes people risk, process risk. The focus of operational risk is making sure that the process is done correctly. That way we avoid losses. We reduce exposures if we make sure our process is done correctly. With strategic risk, that's a speculative risk, and the focus is on making the right decisions for the future so it could potentially experience some gains. So very important that you understand the difference between operational risk and strategic risk. There are both internal and external factors that affect strategic risk. The external factors that affect strategic risk are beyond the organization's control, and that includes things such as economic conditions and consumer demand. Those affect strategic risk. Those affect the organization's decisions, government regulations and trade agreements, competitive pressures. That's another external factor. What's the competition doing? Societal shifts or politics. Those are all external factors that affect strategic risk and decision making. There are also some internal factors that affect strategic risk. The organization's structure, culture, and processes. And if you remember, we said that process risk is actually a type of operational risk. And so what you should note is that strategic risks can be created and affected by factors associated with the other risk quadrants. The hazard risks, such as safety threats, cybersecurity threats, which are another type of operational risk, investment performance, which is a type of financial risk, those can all affect strategic decisions. So strategic decisions are influenced by the other quadrants. Other internal factors include business decisions, policies, processes, hiring practices, resource allocation, and pressure from stakeholders. These are external and internal factors that affect strategic risk. There are various types of strategic risk, and if you're looking at our risk quadrants handout, you'll note that we've listed several hazard risks, such as property risk, liability risk. We've listed several operational risks, such as people and process risk, and several financial risks, which include market risk and credit risk. Let's go through some of the strategic risks, and you'll notice that some of these risks could actually fall in another quadrant. The first type of strategic risk is competition and innovation risk. Let's say that we have an electronics manufacturer and they change their operating system that's used in their computers that they make and the cell phones that they make. And the attempt here is to differentiate itself. The organization wants to differentiate itself and differentiate its products from the competition. So there are both negative and positive potential consequences of this strategic risk. The negative consequences could be that the customers don't like the new operating system, so they switch to a competitor. The positive consequences could include that customers love the new operating system, and so demand increases. So that's one type of strategic risk. Another type of risk is liquidity and financial risk, and that really is more along the lines of financial risk that we talked about in the last module. But once again, we could see some gains or losses here. It's a type of speculative risk. And certainly, liquidity, financial risk, that does influence the decision-making process. Let's say that a restaurant opens two locations in the same city, using its own capital to purchase the buildings and build out the restaurants. If that's the case, there are both negative potential consequences and positive potential consequences. This decision to open two restaurants in the same city could result in the restaurants failing, and now the company has the buildings that it built, and it has to try to sell them, and maybe since the buildings are not very liquid, they will lose a lot of money when they sell the buildings, so they won't be able to sell the buildings very quickly. But there are some positives. Let's say that commercial real estate demand allows buildings to be sold profitably. That's a positive advantage. And let's say that the restaurants do really well. In that case, that could lead to profits for a long time. So liquidity and financial risk also influences business decisions. Another type of risk that's strategic risk is acquisition and economic risk. Let's say that an insurance company decides to acquire a software company with the idea being that the insurance company is going to use the software to better predict risk and better price policies for customers. So the idea is to use the software in the insurance business to try and make things more efficient and try and better price policies. There are some negatives to that. What if the insurance company is unable to integrate the software into their own data? It doesn't work. That would result in losses. A positive, though, is if it does work, the insurance company would be able to potentially secure more customers and better price the insurance. We also have marketing risk. Let's say that a clothing store agrees to work with a new designer. So the clothing store maybe works with five designers. They're going to work with a sixth designer, a brand new designer. The negative is that maybe the new clothing line doesn't sell. The positive is that the clothing line brings in new customers if it does sell. That's marketing risk. We also have procurement risk. Let's say that a manufacturer has been using a supplier for a few years, but it decides to switch to a new supplier, to get rid of the old supplier and switch to a new supplier. In that case, the company might be thinking that maybe the new supplier can provide raw materials faster, maybe cheaper. So what are the negatives and positives of this potential decision? The negative is that maybe the new supplier isn't faster, isn't cheaper, so production is delayed and there's no cost savings. The positive, though, is that the materials are delivered quickly and less expensively. That could result in higher profits for the organization. And then finally, we have regulatory risk. Let's say that a pharmaceutical company launches a new medication in foreign markets. The negative there is that the governments in the foreign markets ban the medication. The positive is that if they're not banned and they do work, the medication, that would increase revenue for the organization. Those are some examples of strategic risk. Once we've identified strategic risks, the next step is to assess strategic risks. And keep in mind that with strategic risks, the goal is not to eliminate negative risks. That's not what we're looking to do when it comes to strategic risks. The goal is to make decisions that optimize the risk-reward ratio. So we want to make the right decisions and take on the right amount of risk to result in, hopefully, an appropriate amount of reward for the organization. This can be difficult, though. This managing of the risk-reward ratio can be difficult because strategic risk is the most intangible and abstract of the four risk quadrants. It's more difficult to assign a dollar value to strategic risk than it is to other types of risks. There are some metrics that are used, though, to quantify strategic risk. Let's talk about a few of those. The first one is economic capital. Economic capital is the capital required to remain solvent and cover the risk that is being retained. That's economic capital. That's one way to potentially measure strategic risk. We also have the risk-adjusted return on capital, the RAROC. That's a measure of return on investment after accounting for risk. It is calculated using a formula, and the formula is taking the return on an asset and subtracting from that return taxes. And once we have that net amount, the return minus taxes, we then divide that by economic capital, which is the first concept here, and that gives us our risk-adjusted return on capital. Another metric that's used to assess strategic risk is shareholder value added. That's a measure of profitability after considering funding costs. This can be an indicator of management effectiveness or ineffectiveness. And we also have risk appetite and risk threshold. You do need to know the difference between these two terms for your exam. Very important. They are similar, but you need to know the differences. Risk appetite is how much risk the organization wants to take on. The risk threshold is the total range of uncertainty the organization is able to take on. So risk appetite is really the risk target. It's essentially a target of risk that the organization wants to take on. This is their targeted amount of risk, the risk appetite. Risk threshold is the amount of risk that is actually acceptable that can be taken on by the organization. This is what they're able to accept. This is what they want to accept. So let's do a practice question. Which one of the following best describes the range or amount of risk that is acceptable to an organization? And we have economic capital, risk threshold, risk appetite, and risk treatment. And in this case, of course, the answer, we just discussed this, it's risk threshold. The risk threshold is the amount of risk that is acceptable to an organization. So B is our answer. A clothing retailer has agreed to start selling jeans from a new unknown fashion designer. The manufacturer of the jeans claims they are more durable and comfortable than most popular brands of jeans. The retailer is hopeful the new line of jeans will increase revenue by bringing in new customers. The clothing retailer will be exposed to which one of the following types of strategic risk? And we have pure risk, economic risk, marketing risk, and procurement risk. And we can easily eliminate the first one because we know that strategic risk in and of itself is a type of speculative risk, not pure risk, so A is clearly false. The answer here is going to be marketing risk. By deciding to market and sell a new line of jeans, there's a risk that they won't sell and the retailer will lose money. That is marketing risk. Procurement risk would be if the organization decided to switch suppliers, drop their old supplier and choose a new supplier. But adding a new line of jeans in this example would be an example of marketing risk. So C is our answer. Let's discuss the strategic management process. Strategic management defines the organization's strategies and creates a means to evaluate the organization's decisions. And strategic management itself is the process of identifying and reviewing business decisions. And strategic management is the responsibility of senior level executives. The strategic management process includes 5 interdependent stages. That includes developing goals, analyzing environments, both internal and external environments, formulating strategies, implementing strategies, and then evaluating those strategies. This is the monitoring phase. Let's go through each one of these phases. The first phase is developing goals. And before an organization can determine specific short or long-term goals, the executives of the organization must establish the organization's vision statement and mission statement. The vision statement is an aspirational description of what the organization will accomplish long-term. The mission statement is a broad expression of an organization's goals. These seem very similar, but there are some differences. The main difference is that with a mission statement, that's generally present-oriented in the now, the present. For example, a mission statement could be something like empower people to succeed. That would apply right now. That's what our goals are right now. Our mission is right now, empowering people to succeed. A vision statement is future-oriented. It's aspirational. For example, generating 1 billion plus leads per year for happy customers. That would be an example of a vision statement. Those need to be created by executives, and we must identify the products, values, and people that will be used to reach goals during the developing goals phase. After developing goals, the next step is to evaluate and analyze both internal and external issues that could affect the organization's ability to achieve its goals. So we want to look at the internal and external environment. And if you remember, we talked about earlier in this class one method of doing that using a SWOT analysis. The SWOT analysis looks at both internal and external environments. Internal analysis focuses on strengths such as a great reputation and weaknesses such as untrained personnel. It also looks at external analysis, such as opportunities, which would be increasing customer demand, or even threats, such as increasing competition. So we look at internal and external analysis and environments, and we can use SWOT analysis to evaluate these, because if you notice, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, that is SWOT. So we could use SWOT analysis. SWOT analysis is used to determine the current state of a company, and of course that stands for, as we just said, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It enables risk professionals to view an organization's capabilities objectively, and also to determine how receptive the market would be to products and services, and evaluate an organization's competitive position within the market. It looks at internal factors and external factors. Strengths and weaknesses are internal factors. Strengths can be paired with opportunities to identify areas of competitive advantage for the company. Weaknesses can be paired with threats to identify risks that should be avoided. Opportunities and threats, of course, are external factors. So that's SWOT analysis. Another framework that can be used to analyze environments is PESEL analysis. PESEL analysis only looks, though, at the external environment. It does not look at the internal environment. PESEL is an acronym that stands for the following items, and you'll notice all of these represent external factors: political, economic, sociological, technical, legal, and environmental. That's where we get PESEL, and that's a framework used in strategic management to analyze the external environment. It identifies opportunities and threats, and what we can do is take each one of these 6 PESEL categories and then use SWOT analysis to take a deeper dive into each of those categories. We can also use the Porter's Five Forces Analysis Model, and that focuses on the forces within an organization's competitive environment. And it can be useful to analyze how successful an organization, product, or service might be. It indicates that these forces are all forces that are applied to an organization, and it's things that we need to look out for with respect to an organization. For example, one of the forces that we would look at under the five forces analysis is the threat of new entrants to the market. We'd also look at, are there substitute products that a customer can use instead of our product? Does the customer have bargaining power to force our organization's prices lower? Does a supplier have bargaining power to raise prices so the organization has to pay more for supplies? And then existing competition is another force that's one of the five forces. This Porter's Five Forces analysis is often used to identify opportunities or threats within a SWOT analysis. So this focuses on opportunities or threats. After analyzing the environments, the next step is formulating the strategies. The executive team develops strategies to improve performance and create competitive advantage. The factors that need to be considered are changes needed to implement the strategy. What's that going to involve to get a strategy implemented? Remember, implementation is the next phase. We need to look at the cost, including the cost of diverting resources from other projects onto this strategy that we're thinking about implementing. The overall return on investment and the organization's risk appetite. And if you remember, we said that risk appetite is how much risk the organization wants to take on, their target. We need to develop short-term strategies that come together to achieve long-term strategies. And there are some questions that can help determine what strategies might be appropriate. For example, is the plan or strategy suitable? We can ask that question. Is the plan financially feasible? Is it acceptable? What risks are associated with the strategy? Those are all questions to ask during the formulation phase. The next step is the implementation phase or the execution phase. Implementation of strategies is the process of making strategies work. More difficult to complete and requires more time than formulating the strategies. All parts of an organization play a role during the execution phase. These are various tasks that are usually carried out by company management during the implementation phase. Identifying and assigning tasks and responsibilities. Communicating information regarding the plan. Allocating adequate resources such as finances, staff, training, equipment, technology, and making necessary adjustments. And then finally, we evaluate those strategies. Once they've been implemented, now it's the monitoring phase, the last phase. Strategy evaluation is also called strategy control, and it involves monitoring progress toward goals. Must establish performance standards and compare them with actual results. A balanced scorecard approach may be applied to measure the overall goal attainment. And the balanced scorecard balances specific goals and actions with both long and short-term goals and financial and non-financial goals. This strategic management process, these steps we just went through, it's cyclical. So it may need to be revised when circumstances change or corrective actions are needed to meet goals. So let's do a practice question. 2 years ago, several major property casualty insurers conducted a survey to determine the accuracy of reserves for asbestos-related claims. As a result of the survey, several insurers were required to make a significant increase in their reserves. Under which one of the following parts of the SWOT analysis would this situation be identified? And if a company is experiencing financial difficulty, or if they have an unanticipated rise in losses or reserves for an insurance company, that's actually considered an internal factor, a weakness, So B is our answer. Let's discuss incorporating strategic risk into strategy. Companies that used to be successful at one point have sometimes gone out of business or lost tremendous amounts of revenue because they fail to consider strategic risks. Look at Toys R Us or BlackBerry, for example. Strategic risks are critical, so let's go through how to incorporate strategic risk into strategy. Strategic risks are a necessary part of doing business, and an organization can deal with strategic risks downstream or upstream. As far as downstream is concerned, that involves dealing with strategic risks after the consequences have already occurred. Unfortunately, it may be too late for an organization to do anything about the risks after the consequences. It may be too expensive, or the losses have maybe already occurred, causing the company to go out of business. It can lead to loss of revenue or even the end of the company. That's dealing with these risks downstream. A better approach is to deal with the risks upstream. That means that the risks are being dealt with as the organization develops its business strategy. This helps prevent negative consequences, and it helps management make decisions that offer the greatest potential risk-reward trade-off. Risks need to be considered while forming a business strategy, and having a plan in place to deal with the risks early will significantly lower the chances that negative risks will harm the organization. The first component of incorporating risk involves the strategic management process. That was what we covered in the preceding learning objective in this module, the strategic management process. And that's where, if you remember, the organization analyzes both the internal and external environments. We talked about that, some methods to analyze the environment. We talked about PESEL analysis, which of course focuses on the external environment exclusively, such as political, environmental, economic. SWOT focuses on both internal and external, strengths, weaknesses, which are internal, opportunities and threats, which are external. After analyzing the environments, the second component in incorporating risk into strategy is assessing the risks associated with the strategic plans that are being considered by the organization. There are a few techniques that can be used to assess those risks. Two of them include scenario analysis and a strategy map. Scenario analysis is brainstorming the worst conceivable set of events that could occur and suggesting ways to prevent those events. We're not trying to predict scenarios. We're not trying to predict events. What scenario analysis does is it helps the organization prepare for events but not predict them. It's not a means of predicting events or scenarios. Scenario analysis can help an organization create a strategy map, which is a visual diagram showing plans an organization develops to meet its strategic objectives. So that's the second component in incorporating strategic risk into strategy. The third component of incorporating strategic risk into strategy is determining risk threshold, risk appetite, key risk indicators, and key performance indicators. Remember, we said earlier that risk appetite is how much risk an organization wants to take on, their target, and risk threshold represents the range or amount of uncertainty or risk an organization is able to accept. That's the threshold. We mentioned key risk indicators earlier, but one thing we may have not mentioned in too much detail are key performance indicators, or KPIs. KPIs measure an organization's progress toward achieving its goals. They measure what has occurred. They look at performance. Key risk indicators, as we said before, are leading indicators that measure risks and volatility that can affect whether those goals can be achieved. The KRIs, the key risk indicators, are predictive, whereas the key performance indicators measure what's already occurred. The final component is to decide which strategies the organization will use in order to meet its goals. This includes planning on how to avoid, exploit, or manage risk. It merges discussions about broad goals and risk treatment prioritization. These risks can influence each other, and it enables the organization to determine where resources should be allocated. Let's say an organization plans to enter a foreign market. Risk management should be applied to the strategy to plan for hazard risk, political risk, exchange rate risk, and various other risks. So let's do a practice question. Which one of the following statements is correct regarding key performance indicators? Key performance indicators, or KPIs, measure risk and volatility that can affect whether an organization can achieve its goals. That's a description of key risk indicators, not key performance indicators, so A is false. KPIs predict the future. That's false. KPIs measure what has already occurred. The key risk indicators predict the future. So B is false as well. C, KPIs measure an organization's progress toward achieving its goals. That is correct. C is our answer, and D, KPIs indicate when thresholds are about to be breached. Key risk indicators do that, so D is false. Once again, C is our answer. Let's wrap up Module 8 by talking about strategic risk management application. Strategic risk management is a process of identifying and managing risks, and also reviewing business decisions. Risks that affect an organization's strategic decisions and performance are identified and managed through strategic risk management. There are some important principles that you need to know for the exam with respect to strategic risk management. Those principles are risk appetite, which we've discussed a couple of times in this module already, risk tolerance, risk assessment, and risk control. Risk tolerance is the same as risk threshold. So we've talked about risk appetite and risk threshold. We'll discuss them again. And we'll also discuss risk assessment and risk control. Let's go through each one of these four. And the first one is risk appetite. Risk appetite represents how much risk the organization wants to take on, their risk target. Some organizations are risk averse. And that's an organization that isn't willing to risk more than a low percentage of capital or revenue to achieve a specified goal. Other organizations are risk aggressive, which is the opposite of risk averse. These risk aggressive organizations typically are organizations that must innovate to grow, such as technology companies. Risk appetite should shift over time as internal and external factors change, and it's very important for managers of the organization to articulate risk appetite statements. That way, the organization has a shared understanding of risk, and the statements can also help decide on proper resource allocation for the organization. That is risk appetite. We also have risk tolerance, and what's a little bit confusing is that risk tolerance is sometimes called risk capacity or risk threshold. Risk tolerance, capacity, threshold are often used interchangeably. But it does represent the amount of risk an organization is able to accept. This is closely related to risk appetite, and it's always stated in quantitative terms. So risk tolerance or risk threshold, unlike risk appetite, is always stated in quantitative terms. Usually there's a high-end threshold, a low-end threshold, or both. And typically, the organization wants to have its risk appetite lie somewhere between the high-end and low-end threshold. A zero risk tolerance level typically results in risk-based decisions that are very rigid. So, for example, if an organization has a zero risk tolerance level for cost overruns on a product development project, it may make achieving a successful product more difficult for that organization. An organization's risk appetite lies between the high-end and low-end risk tolerance thresholds. Treatment trigger levels indicate when a corrective action must be taken. And to achieve a balance of risk, if an organization is taking on a lot of risk in one venture, it may choose to select a lower tolerance threshold in other areas to balance that out. A third important principle to apply is risk assessment. After management determines the organization's strategic goals, risk appetite, and risk tolerance, the organization must determine possible strategies that will achieve goals. And those strategies must fall within risk tolerance and appetite. One approach to help assess strategic risk involves the following steps: listing risks that could affect a proposed decision or activity, using a risk map to assess the likelihood and potential consequences for each risk, and then identifying the highest priority risks, for example, the 5 highest priority risks, and then asking the following questions or a series of questions for each of those risks. Questions such as, what is the tolerance and appetite for the risk? How are we treating the risk currently? Are we keeping the risk at an acceptable level currently? Those are questions that can be asked after the highest priority risks have been identified. And then finally, we have risk control. Organizations need processes and procedures in place for controlling risks at various levels, must ensure risks stay within risk tolerance and risk appetite, as we've said before. Without controls, the organization might assume too much risk or unacceptable types of risk. Specific control measures can be developed for different kinds of risks, and these controls should be implemented at all levels of the organization. So let's do a practice question. Which one of the following statements is correct regarding the application of strategic risk management? Risk appetite represents the total amount of risk an organization can accept. We said that that was risk tolerance or risk threshold, so A is false. Risk capacity represents the amount of risk an organization is willing to accept. What the organization is willing to accept is the organization's risk appetite, so B is false. C, an organization's risk appetite should be static. No, it should shift over time as factors change, so C is false. D, risk tolerance is always stated in quantitative terms. That's right, unlike risk appetite, risk tolerance is always stated in quantitative terms, so D is our answer. And that concludes Module 8.